Hey everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again with Dom. Dom, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing well. I won't say that I'm excited to be talking about Big Brother. I'm not going to go into that like hyperbolic territory yet, but I'm infused. I'm whelmed.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, as we were just sitting here about to start recording, is this a good Big Brother season? Are we getting, even though it's like modern and we have the Den of Temptation and all of this weirdness going on, not to be like I think that the modern seasons are capable of being good, which is why I'm asking. Like, I feel like we could be, I don't want to jinx it, I feel like we could be on track here for a good, passable season of modern Big Brother.
So I think for now it's looking like a good season, or it might have a lot of promise. I will say to exercise caution, though, because we have this same discussion at this point in every single season, every year. It's always after the craziness of the first week. And it does always get pretty crazy that everyone says, oh, this season's actually looking pretty strong this year. And then flash forward 4 weeks later and everything's a bit more muted. And there's one clearly dominant alliance which is just steamrolling over the entire house and no one has the same amount of faith anymore. So as always, I will say, be pessimistic until proven otherwise. But I actually think this cast does have a lot of potential, so I'm more hopeful than I would be in most seasons.
Right, to me that's what it comes down to, is I really feel like I'm liking this cast a lot. And one thing in at least what I have been seeing on Twitter and hearing in the Big Brother podcast that I've been listening to that I feel like hasn't come up enough is this is a much older cast, I think, than most Big Brother casts tend to be. I swear the average Big Brother cast average age used to be like 24 for a few years. It was very low for a long time. And there are a lot of people in their 30s. We have Kevin in there, even older. I think this is a very good sign for just Big Brother casting in general. I think they definitely have gone, they're going the right direction with the casting for me.
Yeah, so a very promising cast, possibly. Lots of stuff to be excited about for now. Who knows how much of that will stick around in a month or two. For now, though, there's a lot to get excited about, not only about Big Brother this week, but also some stuff that we have coming down the pipeline here as well.
Yeah, and I guess the place that we can start with that is a couple of days ago at this point, and this will be up in the next couple of days at the time that we're recording this, we had the opportunity to speak to Rob Cesternino again. He was willing to come on for the first time. It had been over 5 years since we'd had Rob on our podcast, and that went, I think, really well. Rob was a ton of fun to talk to, and this time what we talked to him about was essentially just life as Rob Cesternino and how everything goes for him with RHAP and a lot of things that I think the listeners of of hopefully our podcast, but also I'm sure most people who listen to us also listen to RHAP and would be very curious about this kind of thing. And I think there's a lot of really interesting stuff in there, and Rob was fantastic and very generous with his time. So definitely be on the lookout for that podcast in the next day or two by the time you're hearing this.
Yeah, that was a ton of fun, and you decided to return the favor. So you are not talking about life as Colin Stone, but you are talking about Big Brother. So you will be joining Rob and some of the live feed correspondents for the Thursday Big Brother show this week.
So I've been told, yeah. I will be on the Thursday after the eviction. I'm looking forward to that. I want to put out there ahead of time, like, it was not planned that we would be putting up this interview with Rob, like, the day before I would get to go and plug it to Rob's entire Big Brother audience, but it definitely works out very nicely, Dom. It's much better to be lucky than good in that regard.
Yeah, bearing in mind that it isn't actually up yet, that there is more time for it to be delayed or for something to happen that could derail the entire thing.
But oh, I mean, there's plenty of time for me to tweet something stupid and get kicked off before I even get to go on RHAP or whatever.
Rob will have to officially disavow you, yeah. But in other Big Brother news, so when we solicited feedback from you a few weeks ago, one of the things that we heard loud and clear was, we want more Big Brother. And so we're trying to supply that this season. Again, not making any long-term commitments there. However, we want to satisfy that as much as we can, and we thought there is a season of Big Brother that we are both absolutely in love with that we have never discussed on the show in anything more than like a passing reference, but which I know is very close and dear to a lot of people's hearts. And on not the 10th anniversary, which would have been ideal, but the 11th anniversary of Big Brother All Stars, we decided it would be good to do an audiobook style review of the entire season. So we're not quite sure exactly what format that's going to be yet, but we are very excited to firstly rewatch the season. I've seen it a lot of times now. I think this is the first time in 2 or 3 years, so very excited to go back and see that again, but also thrilled to just be discussing that because there's so much depth and so much great stuff going on there.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say audiobook. It's not going to be 30 hours, but I think it would be kind of like the way we did The Genius, where we'll talk. It'll be in a few different parts, and we hope to have maybe a couple different people come on and talk to us about that. But yeah, I have said before, give me Big Brother 7 over any season of Survivor. It is up until I discovered The Genius, it was hands down my favorite season in the history of reality TV. And I can't believe we didn't think of doing this sooner, but I am thrilled to get to dive into all of that. That's a lot of fun coming down the way for the Big Brother people as well. And I really do feel like I have, while we aren't huge fans of like the modern Big Brother, like what Big Brother I think has become, I think it makes sense given our love for Big Brother 7 that like we have always been big defenders of old school Big Brother. Like I've always thought that Big Brother the game, when it's not constantly messed around with by production, is a much better game than Survivor strategically.
And that is really on display in that season, where you get to see every facet of the game really explored. And so when we were brainstorming ideas for what to do over the summer, when that came to me, I was like, how have we not done this before? And how did I not think of this until now? And it was so perfect and so obvious that it's like, okay, that's what we're doing. And I think you were on board as soon as I suggested it as well.
Right. Like we toyed with doing it with a couple of random Survivor seasons before, but never really gotten around to actually doing that. But Big Brother 7, I think we're both very excited to dive into. So that's, I'm not even sure when that's going to happen, but hopefully hopefully this is in our next like Genius 3 podcast coming soon for the next 18 months.
Yeah, sometime this decade hopefully, but tweet at us, keep the pressure going, light a fire on us, and we'll get that to you as soon as we can.
And incidentally, I guess we'll say it at the top of the show for once, you can find Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. The only other thing that I want to flag up before we get into all of this is for the more hardcore fans out there, because I know there are a lot of people who take their Big Brother quite seriously. I do follow along with what is roughly going on with the live feeds, and I know Dom is the same way. We definitely want to put it out there before we start talking really in detail about any of this. We are not experts on all that has gone down in the Big Brother house. There is plenty that I'm sure we'll be slightly wrong about the details of. Please cut us some slack. We have a lot going on. There's too much that happens in that place when there are still, 15 or 16 people in there. We are going to do our best. But for the most part, my commentary will be based largely on the TV show at this point.
And that's why we tried to get some people who are more qualified, more knowledgeable in to discuss that with us. So Liana Boris very kindly joined us last week, and she was great. But we are going based on live feed reports that we hear from the LFC and others. So if our analysis is bad, blame them is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dom, I think let's dive into it. And as you mentioned, we've already done a little bit of Big Brother content earlier. We had Liana on to talk after the two-night premiere last Wednesday and Thursday. We hung up that podcast a little after like midnight here on the East Coast. The live feeds came on shortly thereafter, and Megan was gone from the house. Twitter was on fire. As soon as within 10 minutes of the live feeds going live, we had major chaos going on in the Big Brother house. Were you awake for this, or did you fall right asleep?
As soon as we hang up, I went straight to bed and had to learn about the aftermath of all of this the next day. Also, tried watching the feed. It was region locked. I could not get in. So that's but basically any attempt to follow along has been curtailed. So don't blame me. I am entirely blameless in all of this. From what I could see, a lot of people were just kind of dumbfounded. Like, we weren't really sure how to take this. Was this the first actual quit that we've seen in a very long time? Was this was there some external issue that was coming into play that just coincidentally happened around this time? Was there some event that sparked all of this off that led to some massive blow up or some like physical violence or something? Like, we didn't have the details, and no one was really talking about it in the house because they didn't know either at the time what was going on.
Right. And that's the other thing, is like all we get, because we didn't have these live feeds from when this was happening, even until the episode airs, all we really have are kind of like incidental retellings from people. Like, I think Paul, the night the live feeds came on, sat down and like talked to America and talked about that whole situation. But even then, all we really have is his version of how that whole thing ended up going down. And it's not until the following like Sunday that we end up actually getting to see any of what led to Megan actually leaving.
Yeah, and I don't know if this qualifies as the lead, but if it does, then let's not bury it. Let's dive into this right now. So what did you make of all of this as you were learning about it and as you were watching this unfold on the Sunday show?
Right. So when the live feeds first came on and we saw that Meghan was gone, of course, we all know that like this is not a planned exit from the house. Something has gone wrong here. And it very much sounded like right away that she had quit. And that, to me at least, after watching the show, I would stand by that. It seems to me that is, as history will remember it, going to be like the narrative about Meghan is she went in there. Yes, there was a giant misunderstanding, but after a few days and some time, you know, getting put into kind of a rough situation, partially by her own doing, maybe not as much as some people would say, but I think she will be remembered as someone who just walked because she couldn't handle the pressure. Are you on board with that, first of all?
I not exactly for reasons I'll get onto in a second. I know that was the immediate reaction that everyone interpreted that, oh, she must have quit. And so Twitter really was lighting Meghan on fire. And you know, all the usual suspects saying all the usual things. And it's very easy in those spots to like send out a really snarky live tweet, which if Meghan had quit would, you know, be appropriate, I think, maybe. But then like, if it comes out that there are actually good reasons for it, you feel really uncomfortable in retrospect. And
right.
That's just the perils of live tweeting, I guess, like that. You can't really escape that.
Right. Well, do you, because I think you are on, I think it sounds to me at least like you are willing to be a little bit more charitable towards Meghan than the general public seems to have been so far. And I think with you to a certain extent on that, because it does seem based on the TV show, like, she was in there truly feeling like, hey, this is exactly what I heard, and this entire house is gaslighting me, essentially.
Well, so the explanation that she gave after she left the house, so she had, I think it was a Periscope post, or at least in some public forum, was that the events of the house in that first week, just everything that was going on, and all the people like yelling at her and getting into arguments with her, and also just the whole pressure of everything, like, triggered a lot of traumatic stuff from her past that she thought she would be able to cope with in the house, but it turned out that, as the situation unfolded, she wasn't able to, and so she didn't feel able to carry on. I saw some people then, like, questioning that, and they were saying, like, well, if that was true, then would she be acting this way after she left the house and so on? I don't think that's really a useful or productive route to go down, but I think it is interesting to, like, remove Meghan from the situation and say, just in general, like, what is the appropriate way for the person in that situation, the people around them, and also CBS and production to go about handling that?
Yeah, I don't think this is, like, to me, I don't think this is like Vitas wanting to leave as soon as he's the first boot on Survivor. I don't think it's that. I don't think it's a situation where it's like, oh, I tried to play and I got my spot blown up and I didn't want to hang out for another week. Like, when Vitas, particularly as a returnee, obviously knows what he's in for. Like, he didn't seem to have much of a problem being away from his newborn child while he was still in the game. It was just once he was the first one gone, it was send me home. I really don't think that that's what we're getting here out of Meghan. And I do think that this is something that I honestly felt like I didn't hear as much as I would have liked to about. It's just the other side of the story when it comes to Meghan. As far as, like, I think we tend to have a focus on, oh, anyone who does this could, you know, must have no respect for the game and must, you know, not deserve to have even been put in there in the first place. I think there is I understand that there may be some external factors, and given the way that we saw things play out within the house, this isn't the most shocking thing to me. Like, this almost story checks out to me, the way this ended up going these first, like, 8 days or whatever for Meghan.
And I think one reason that people were casting doubt on that in retrospect was that the show really didn't push that as part of the narrative at all. It was, you see Meghan going to the DR after these arguments in the house, and then she leaves, and it does look in that situation like, oh, she couldn't handle the pressure, so she got out of the kitchen, so to speak. But if there was actually underlying issues there, then it's worth discussing. And that's why I think it's so pointless to say, oh, was this triggering Meghan's PTSD? Like, that's not, I don't know. And if I did know, it would be kind of gauche to comment on it, I think. But I think, a worthwhile discussion to have, because it's, lots of questions that this opens up. The first one is, like, if you are someone who, like, a reaction I saw a lot of people give was, well, she must have known that this was a problem for her, so why would she go on a show like this where you know that people are going to be yelling at you, where you know you're going to have to get into fights, and given that you you know this is a problem. Like, you kind of got what was coming to you, which I think is pretty uncharitable, really. Like, if you were a Big Brother super fan, if this was something that you had dreamed of for a long time, and it looked like this might actually be a realistic possibility, like you are getting calls from the producers saying, okay, you're coming to finals, we're putting you on the show, like, would you want to just turn them down there and then because maybe this might bring up something which has been an issue for you in the past? Like, you would think for the rest of your life, what if I had gone on Big Brother and been able to really live that dream? So it's like, is she meant to apply that logic to other situations and just like not leave her house? Like, if you can't, given that this is a problem for you to some extent in your life, you can't just avoid everything permanently that might trigger that stuff again. I mean, even if you think that's a realistic coping strategy in some cases, and it may well be, that, you know, for something like this, which is a once in a lifetime thing, you can't reasonably expect people to just turn that down because because of some artificial concern that you say that you have for their well-being or anything.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. Although I do feel like to kind of make like a counter to go back to like the Vetus thing, like I feel like if Megan wasn't on the block and feeling like she was as good as out the door, I don't imagine that a few arguments would have gotten her to quit. And I also wonder, by all accounts, it seems like she was in the diary room for like 3 hours before that ended up, it sounds to me, based on what I've heard, like it was an inordinately short amount of time that it took for her to say, you know what, I'm done, compared to, like, I remember famously, like, Audrey was in the diary room for like 8 hours at certain points and would come out, you know, would come back into the house. Megan was gone, and then 3 hours later was just gone from the set.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's, so I agree that if she hadn't been on the block, then maybe this wouldn't have happened, but I feel like that's just kind of trivially saying, well, if this thing didn't compound the situation even further, then maybe it wouldn't have escalated even further, which, okay, yeah, obviously, but that doesn't really tell you much.
If she wasn't on the block, she wouldn't be getting in as many arguments and so forth. She wouldn't be, you know, she wouldn't have to be crafting all these narratives about whatever else is doing.
And it's not just she ended up on the block because the HOH needed someone and she was a pawn or whatever it is. She was being put up because people didn't like her and they wanted to kick her out of the house. And
like, explicitly, like not even trying to hide it.
Literally telling her to her face that they don't like her in very raised voices sometimes, and just like really pushing that hard. So I, and again, removing the specifics of this situation, I think it's worth talking about. So the next question maybe would be, if you are CBS, if you're the producers, if you know that someone has this these issues, if this has come up in the screening process, if they've admitted this, firstly, is it responsible to let them on the show? And then secondly, what kind of duty of care do you have to them when they're on the show to ensure that that is treated in a responsible way?
Right. So I think the last time that we talked about things along these lines, and thankfully we haven't had to do it anytime recently, I remember when we were podcasting about Survivor Kara Moen, both about Shamar, I know, had some possible PTSD issues, and then also just the responsibility in putting Brandon Hance back out there. Like, this is a conversation that we've had in the context of like these CBS reality shows before, but it's been a while. It really seemed to me like Shamar and Brandon were people they should have absolutely seen coming. Like, this is not going to end well. And it almost felt, frankly, like they were putting them out there to have like these big breakdowns. I don't feel like that was the case with Megan at all. I feel like Megan, maybe it's just the way that she presents herself compared to those two. But I really did not feel like this was any kind of, based on what little I would know about casting or just human psychology in general, or putting people under these intense conditions, I would not have had, I don't think, any issue with putting Megan in the Big Brother house.
Well, let's not sleep on Willie Hance either, who gets cruelly overloaded in all of these discussions.
I mean, he was obviously put in there to have some big meltdown. Of course.
And that was clearly just, a good decision from a TV rating standpoint, maybe, but certainly not the ethical one.
I loved that over, like, the timing of that worked such that, like, Brandon had just filmed Kara Moen right as they were also putting Willie into the Big Brother house, but it hadn't aired yet, so they were like doubling down, almost tripling down on the Hance brand, but it was too late to like go back on it even after Brandon had done it. It was incredible timing, and then Willie gets kicked out in the first week too, or whatever.
Absolutely. But you make a good point that the way that Megan carries herself is almost the exact opposite of what you saw with certainly Brandon and to a lesser extent Shamar, but like Megan seemed fairly quiet and certainly quite non-confrontational. She wasn't like that, whatever feelings were that was inspiring in her, that wasn't being converted into anger towards other people. She wasn't venting externally, right? She was just going through this kind of inner turmoil. Whereas Brandon was just like flying off the handle and like being borderline violent at points. So I think it's certainly different in terms of the possible danger to other people. Like Megan, certainly it seemed the only danger there was to herself and to her own well-being. And so she made the decision that she felt was best for that. You said that we don't know, like we're not psychologists. We are in no position to judge this. One person who is someone that I interviewed for a segment on a show that we have coming up somewhere down the pipeline, who is actually the psychologist for Big Brother Canada. So I asked him about this, this was just after the Megan situation was happening. And he said that they do obviously check for this in the screening process. And for someone who said that they were struggling with these issues, they would firstly advise them to think long and hard about whether they wanted to be on the show. And then also his professional opinion or advice to CBS would be to probably not put that person on unless he was very sure and they were very sure that they would be able to handle it. And he seemed to think that in general they are very good at detecting people who could be susceptible to suffering in that kind of environment. And it's interesting that like we notice the Megans and maybe the Shamars and the Brandon Hanses in the other category, we don't notice all the people who obviously failed the psych screening or who, some psychologist picked up on this sign and then disqualified them, and so they never made it on the show in the first place, right? So we don't see when they do their job well. We only see when they do their job badly. So it's easy to say like, oh, they fucked up here, but maybe this is just one of the out of the hundreds of contestants they have on the show, maybe this is just one of the times where it didn't work.
Right, that's the Black Mirror Big Brother house, is where they put all the people who fail the psych exam into a separate Big Brother house, and it's just like, yeah, it's porn for it's hate porn, basically. I think that's the darkest timeline of Big Brother. But yeah, I think you're definitely right. But like, we have probably been spared a lot of people who would have made many seasons uncomfortable. And maybe it's interesting to think back to like BB2, very early on in that season, we had the guy Justin like really freaking people out, and like at a certain point, like literally, I know she was like consenting to it in the moment or whatever, but like holding a knife up to Krista's throat and like all this extremely uncomfortable stuff in like the very first couple of weeks of Big Brother 2.
Yeah, and then in BB4 you had Scott getting kicked out as well in the first week, with his ex there in house, and that apparently set him off. So yeah, this is luckily I don't think you can call it a recurring issue, but it's obviously something which will come up from time to time, and when it does, it's worth discussing. It's worth placing it in that kind of context.
Yeah.
I think the last question is, so we watch Big Brother in part because of the drama, and we understand that in order to create the conditions for that drama, you're going to put people deliberately under a lot of artificial pressure. So you're depriving them of the food that they enjoy, like they don't get any contact with the outside world. It's just a very stressful environment in general, more so than anything that you really encounter in the outside world. Which, when it comes to just like the average Big Brother contestant going nuts inside the house, is entertaining, and we kind of accept that as necessary for that. But when it comes to someone who is grappling with your mental health problems or anything else, does it start to look a bit more sinister in that context?
Well, what do you mean? Like, as if it's deliberate? Or is that what you're.
No. Well, I'm saying that like if someone has a struggle like that, which maybe is lying dormant most of the time, but which can be triggered by certain things, that is much more likely to happen in the kind of circumstances that Big Brother tries to put you in,
Oh, no
right?
question.
So
Yeah. But I don't think they're doing it. Like, I don't think they're ever. Like, I think what they're banking on is that, but I don't think they feel like that requires a type of person who is more susceptible to be vulnerable to that. I think what they would say is, we're going to take fairly stable people, or at least back in the day, some fairly stable people from time to time, and the game is going to be what ends up driving them crazy. I think, like, Jeff Probst, when it comes to Survivor, loves that like, the human drama and all of the duplicity is what really, like, people become entirely different versions of themselves.
Right. It's, yeah, I'm not accusing them of like deliberately putting someone in those conditions to spark that kind of reaction, but it's, I think, worth noting just in general that like this is kind of the price you pay maybe for the entertainment that you get otherwise, and which you don't usually associate with that kind of event.
Yeah. Just to as we start hopefully wrapping on Megan, because I know we have a lot to be getting to over the course of this podcast, but what was just your take overall on the actual specifics of that incident and how it built to such a head, the whole Panda and Pow Pow situation with her and Alex and Jessica?
So obviously the Megan situation isn't funny or comical, and neither is the exact incident that happened, but just like the defenses of it that you see are just absolutely hilarious. Like, you, so there's this misunderstanding that, you know, we heard these rumors that Megan accused someone else, another house guest, turned out to be Jessica, of making this racist comment, and then when it turned out she didn't, then, you know, Megan was unable to like own up to that or make amends, and so that was the main thing that led to her leaving. And it turns out that, like, oh yeah, okay, She didn't call Alex a panda. She called her Pow Pow. So she wasn't being explicitly racist.
Yeah.
She was only saying that all Asians look the same, which is much better, obviously. Like, and somehow that's not the worst thing that Jessica has done so far. She's only been in there for a few weeks, but she's already building a resume for herself.
Yeah, that's actually been something I've been wondering about, is Jessica is not only calling, or at least occasionally referring to Alex's Pow Pow. She also said, she referred to from time to time Dominique as Davon. I've been really wondering how she's avoiding, so what I would imagine would have been more kind of vitriol from Twitter and from all, Reddit or wherever else that we saw, certainly with like Aaron on BB15 most famously. Maybe it's because Cody is deflecting a lot of that attention, but I'm actually really surprised that Jessica isn't less popular, especially based on the way it seems like she's coming across on the TV show as well.
Maybe that's the strategy behind the showmance of buddy up with the guy who's somehow even worse than you, and then you have as much cover to say all the stupid shit you want.
Yeah, I think that's really solid game planning right there. But and one other actually just final point that I wanted to bring up about Megan is, what did you just in general make of the Megan and Nokomis comparisons? Because I know that was obviously a popular thing to, you know, a comparison to make preseason. They both seem similar, like kind of laid back personalities. Obviously they have the dyed hair. And it really did strike me that in both of Nokomis' seasons, she really did kind of carve out, here are my people and here are your people. And while she didn't, you know, get into these big kind of blowups for the most part, and she didn't, you know, leave once it became clear that she would, you know, her goose was cooked, I do still think there is potentially something to that. And I do think, despite Megan actually walking here, I really hope this is a type that we get to see more of in the Big Brother house on future seasons.
Yeah, so on one level, those comparisons are kind of trite, and I don't know, like, there's obviously an aspect of the whole Alex and Pow Pow thing that isn't there with Megan and Nokomis, but it's still just like, oh, I can only classify people based on some vaguely similar appearance from, like, 11 seasons ago. I don't know, I feel like you can do better than that, but I think the difference with, like, Nokomis was, she's actually a very interesting person who, when we go back and talk about BB7, even though she was only there for 2 weeks, we're actually going to spend some time talking about, I reckon. I think, like, Nokomis was just fairly open about who she was, and she might have had some insecurities or whatever, but I felt like she was very much, you can take it or leave it, and, you know, these are my people, as you said, and I'm just going to do my thing. I think Megan wanted to be liked by, you know, the majority and the people who were in power, and they just didn't like her back, and that was really a difficult experience for her.
Well, to counter your counterpoint, I do think there are more similarities to Megan and Nokomis in the grand scheme of Big Brother casting than just the dyed hair, first of all. And now I've forgotten after that stellar counterpoint where I was going to go with that. But it's certainly, I don't know. I'm sorry. Bail me out here, Dom, while I come up with what I was going to say.
So I will. All right. So we say that she left because of, or in part because of, the did Jessica say this, did she not say this argument. When it comes to stuff like PTSD, it's often very difficult to attribute that to any one thing. Like, it's not a kind of thing where, like, this happens and then therefore this happens. You do have maybe reliable triggers sometimes, and situations that you know what to avoid, or at least you do your best to avoid. But often it's just like random things that inexplicably spark this after some period of time. So like, even if this wasn't an issue for Megan in the past 5 years, there's no statute of limitations on that, and it can often just be this random confluence of events that sets that all off unpredictably. And that's what makes it even more scary, that like, you don't know when this is going to be an issue again. I guess one more Megan equals Nokomis thing, or Megan like squiggle equals Nokomis. This, we've seen in recent Survivor seasons that the young female nerd archetype has been doing pretty well recently, but that hasn't really carried over to Big Brother. You see like the Steves and Ians of the world, maybe not the Camerons do so well, but it's that hasn't really. There's no like gender balance there, and yet.
Well,
you would think...
Nicole won last season, by the way, and she wears giant glasses, Dom, so she must be a nerd. She's young. She wears giant glasses. She's a loser, Dom. We all know it. It's sad exclamation point.
Obviously, but it's. I think it's an interesting point though, because on Survivor, you know, there's such a high premium is placed on like challengeability, or people thinking that you can survive out there in the wild, and those are qualities that are typically associated with like strong guys with six packs who have this like conventional alpha male image, definitely not so much with the nerdy younger woman. So you think that group would be more successful on Big Brother, and yet we really haven't seen that carry across.
It seems like they're just not casting that type so much. Like they're not casting. I'm struggling to even remember. Maybe like Bridget from last season. Does she count as fitting into that?
I think Bridget is close, maybe, but she doesn't fit that stereotype to me.
Does Bronte count?
Hard pass on that one. not even going there.
Okay. Well, what more do we want to be getting into before we start diving into like what's actually been going on in the game recently?
Oh, God only knows. So my general sense of what's happening is that Paul has been massively overplaying his hand with the safety that he's been given. But it's not coming back to bite him just yet. But I wonder if the seeds are being sown for his downfall a few weeks down the line.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into your boy and mine, Paul, everyone's boy, who is back for this season, of course. Let's dive into, I guess, shortly after Megan left, when the live feeds came on, we found out that Paul had, of course, won the Pendant of Protection. When we talked to Liana, we talked about this as basically a foregone conclusion, as I think most people did when they were talking about speculating who's going to get the Pendant of Protection. It seemed clear it would be Paul, and this whole Paul sequence early on, I think, is like the perfect snapshot of modern like Big Brother in general. Like the idea that like production obviously knows that when they set up the rules this way, Paul is, after that first temptation, the 25,000, going to come into the game, and after the second temptation, where America votes after the first two episodes, obviously going to get that Pendant of Protection 100% of the time. There is no other outcome. It is genuinely as if they started with the scenario, how do we get Paul back into the house with a few weeks of secret immunity, and like worked backwards to make that possible.
Is this better or worse in your view than Netta being given what was essentially a free month of immunity? And of course the producers knew that she was going to win it, and that was like, where do the two stack up for you?
They are essentially equal for me. It's, we know exactly what is going to happen. It's Paul will 100% of the time get this Pendant of Protection, and I would imagine Netta would essentially 100% of the time. I certainly thought it was a foregone conclusion. Netta is going to be the one who gets the safety up until the jury. I think they are essentially doing the exact same thing. It wouldn't surprise me if Big Brother US saw what they did with Netta and said, oh, that's a very good idea. We can present this as if it's up in the air, but we obviously know how this is going to go.
Yeah, it is always going to be fundamentally unfair to have America voting on something that is relevant to the game when there is a player in there who has a pre-existing fan base just by virtue of being a former player. At least in Big Brother Canada, it was kind of mitigated by the fact that you had these other returning players there, some of whom are quite popular. Maybe the votes could be divided some way that, like, Nedda gets a lizard and someone else, like, sneaks in and takes it instead. With here, like, they knew, everyone knew what was going to happen. And I'm sure the pool fans were happy about it. And so credit to their boy. But, like, everyone knew this was on the cards. And it was so shameless as well that when Paul gets a temptation and the punishment that gets unleashed on the house is confined to one other player that isn't Paul. Like, it would be one thing if Paul gets a few weeks of immunity and then once that expires, he now has the nomination curse or whatever they call it. But for, like, Ramses to get landed with it instead is just...
Right. It's random. It's not like he said, okay, I pick Ramses and then has to deal with Ramses knowing that he cursed him or whatever. It's totally, he can, even if Ramses finds out that it's Paul, I think Ramses did know, hey, it's because of Paul's temptation that I ended up getting the curse. It's not like there's anything Paul did. It's sorry, bro. Like, they made me do it to someone. I'm sorry. But, like, it really will continue to probably shock us, I would guess, about how stupid some of these curses are going to be, and I would imagine down the line how stupid some of these temptations are going to be once all of the people America likes have gotten whatever their prize of the week is. I think we're going to see some very some stretches, to say the least, once we hit like week 9, 10, 11 for this Den of Temptation.
Yeah, it would be one thing maybe if so one cool twist could be if Paul has to, so someone else gets this curse at random, but then they are told that Paul chose them to receive the curse, and Paul has to maintain that lie. And so, like, they go through the game thinking that Paul just wanted to screw them over for some reason. That maybe could be interesting, but this way it's completely hopeless. And so recently a mutual friend of ours asked, why do you still watch Big Brother and pretend that it's any kind of, like, strategic game that is fair in any way? And I don't really have a good answer. And after the events of the past few weeks, I still don't.
Well, I think, like, I hope it, at this point for me, goes without saying that when I'm talking about modern Big Brother, I don't care. I used to be so outraged back in the days of, like, BB11 and BB13, like, oh my God, production is actively, like, tanking the sanctity of this incredible game. I am long since over it by now. They're obviously doing whatever they're doing. It's not going to change. It's probably only going to get worse. And that's why this cast being such a hit for me leaves me so optimistic. Like, I feel like this is the first season where we're starting to, at least with the casting, start trending back in the right direction. I do think it would be, and it almost was hysterical, where without this secret immunity that Paul got, we almost had yet another Big Brother attempt at, like, this big week one twist of springing this vet back in with all these newbies. He was going to be up and out if it wasn't for this pendant of protection. He would have been gone week one.
Is that confirmed? Paul definitely would have gone if he was nominated?
I would imagine so. I can't say that 100% certainty. I can't fathom him staying over. I may be wrong, but I feel like I have heard that he would have left had Cody actually been able to put him up, were it not for this completely ridiculous twist. I think that would be so funny if, like, I laugh every single time we have the BB saboteur leaves week one, or the BB takeover just gets discarded without comment after, like, week two or three or whatever. Like, I think it is so great when production tries these things and it just fails so hard. Like, that is the angle that I'm hoping to take this from at this point. Like, I'm hoping the Den of Temptation can just become comedy, because I am frankly long since over this being a game. Like, I like to hear, when I listen to RHAP, Taryn say stuff like, obviously great, I say this, great friend of the show, Taryn Armstrong, been on the show many times, and I say this with love of Taryn, but, like, to hear him say, I wish there were no twists, or, like, oh, to hear him put the game in terms of, like, what the strategically correct move would be, like, those, it's been years since that has mattered.
Right, it's and I think we might be understating just how bad it really is, because when Cody has to nominate five people in the first week, we think that's hilarious, because Cody is this either amazing or terrible villain, depending on who you are.
Amazing.
And so it's right. Oh, well, it's kind of borderline, but it's fun to watch him get stuck with that responsibility.
Amazing villain, someone, to be clear, not amazing guy. I'm saying, like, that's
definitely, well, more on the terrible side.
Right. Right. You said villain, though, just to be clear. I don't want that lost in context.
But if it was someone who the audience actually likes and is rooting for and wants to do well, and they had had to do that instead, we would be screaming about how unfair this is, and quite justifiably, I think. So maybe in our bias, we are letting that cloud our judgment in the other direction, to where like we're giving them more credit than maybe we should be.
Yeah, I don't know. Like that's kind of what I'm getting at, though, is to me, I'm in Big Brother now for kind of the spectacle of Cody nominating five people, or just the spectacle of Cody in general getting clowned on so hard. And like, I don't think, whenever Cody ends up leaving the Big Brother house, he's really going to see it coming the way that he's being like treated on the show. I don't think he gets it.
Well, so you think he won't see his reception by the fans coming?
You're right.
Yeah, he strikes me as a type who, no matter what, no matter what he does, no matter how anyone else reacts to it, he will always think that he's in the right. And if he somehow cottons on to the fact that people don't like him, he'll think, oh, well, they're just all a bunch of losers. Why do they even watch this show in the first place? His disdain for the franchise is clear, and maybe one of the only things which is empathetic or likable about him. He is not going to, I think, ever really change his behavior at all.
Yeah, I mean, Cody, I think, really has been, with the exception of Paul, is it unfair to say that Cody has been, like, the main character of Big Brother to this point? Obviously, Paul's going to be in there eating up a ton of the screen time, but it really feels like every single twist and turn, and it goes without saying when he's HOH in week one, especially when he's HOH for like 16 days or whatever, that he's going to be a key player. But it really does feel like pretty much every episode is Cody and Paul, and then the rest of the house get about a third of the episode combined. And I guess let's get into some of Cody. You know, he's, of course, our HOH here. After Megan leaves the house, he ends up having to put up another nominee. He puts Alex up on the block before we even played the power of veto. And let's get into this power of veto that Alex ends up winning and taking herself off, and then he has to nominate two more people to fill that spot. But what did you think of this challenge? I really like the idea behind this power of veto challenge, where this is the one where they're stacking starfish and the only timer is the clock that they can keep refilling themselves. What did you like this, or did you not like? Because I like the idea of having a challenge that could go on for, hours upon hours if Joey Amazing and Spencer are battling it out for the power of veto or whatever, to use people who haven't played Big Brother as horrible examples.
Yeah, so do you think there's some kind of easy hack to this challenge? Because I saw some Twitter debate about something like, what if someone just establishes an early lead and then just stalls, like just keeps refilling their thing? Like, is there... Is this we've talked about this in the context of The Genius a lot. Is this a good challenge, the way that people will actually play it, or is it a good challenge based on how it could be played if people were trying to like think outside the box and come up with some way to just like bypass the rules of the game?
Well, if you have a huge lead, you would not want to keep stalling, but it's the opposite. What the way this challenge doesn't work is if you get like Ozzy out there, who just will not stop filling his water thing and also can't stack. Like, it's beyond the point that this is not going to happen, but he also just won't quit. It's when you get the idiot out there who says, I'll never say die, like that kind of thing, where you spend 9 hours out there. Like, that is the production nightmare behind this. But I really do think there's a lot of value in having something like this. Like, what I hate seeing, and I hate that they still do this challenge. I believe they did it in BB Can 5 because it was solved immediately the first time it was run, is the one where everyone is out there and they have to like just press a button as close to an hour as possible, and everyone can see when they've pressed the button. So people just obviously buzz right in as soon as the person they don't want to win the veto wins it. Like, this isn't a challenge like that to me, where like, I think this is a challenge where there's a lot of room for exploration in the kind of like game mergent strategy department, whereas I think a lot of the Big Brother challenges are the opposite. So this is the kind of thing that I'm definitely happy with seeing, for sure. But it did kind of throw a wrench into things for Cody here, where he could have conceivably kept filling up his aqua clock and kept fighting against Alex, who had a very solid stack of starfish, to potentially keep her from winning the power of veto. But he just lets his clock drain out. What did you think of that? Because, like, I'm actually an advocate of, in challenges, if it's obvious you're not going to win, just throw in the towel. And I was surprised to actually see this from Cody.
Yeah, and I guess there's not even a consideration of, oh, well, if I keep going in this challenge, then I'm going to seem like a bigger threat, because everyone already wants him gone at that point anyway. Even if he didn't have to nominate five people in the same week, I think he already would have been a target just because of how he acts and just how he ostracized himself from the rest of the house so pointlessly, I guess. But yeah, so if you're thinking about this as a strategic decision, then okay, I guess it makes sense, but it's not even on that register for me.
Yeah, and I was watching some live feeds like the night after the power of veto or whatever, and Cody was talking about like, yeah, you know, I could have gone for it, and like I thought about taking the sweep of the power for the week, but I wanted to let someone else have it for a little while.
That kind of smugness is the only way that it actually makes sense, because Cody really strikes me as a type who, like, your worth as a person and as a player is dependent on how good you are in these challenges or how close you are to Cody. You know, there's some leeway there.
Know who he reminds me of? No, one of, like, the all-time classic underrated villains, as far as I'm concerned, from a season of Big Brother, and understandably underrated, because it was not always a fun time with some of the comments he was making. Jeremy from BB15. Different personalities, but very equally, like, hateable. Like, everyone can get on board with hating this guy.
Yeah, I can see that, actually. But yeah, I
didn't. And, like, genuine, like, believes in earnest that if he wants to, he can run the table round after round after round in competitions and just stay safe the whole time.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about Cody going into this week, but that, I honestly think that's what he was expecting coming in. Like, okay, theoretically, I might be in danger, but I'm just going to win, so who cares?
My friends who do not watch Survivor, but who I've just have mentioned, you know, offhand a couple of times, like, I've had multiple friends say to me, like, oh, if I was on Survivor, I'd just win all the immunity challenges. They'd never be able to vote me out. Like that is their airtight game plan for it's a very easy game, Colin. Yeah. Like, I don't know what you're wasting your time here for. Yeah. All right. So Alex wins that power of veto. And by the way, your key strategy for this challenge, Dom, stack the fish flat. It's a lot easier to stack them high. All right. Hilarious joke that Dom isn't even paying attention to. So here we go. Alex is down and we need a replacement nominee now. Cody decides he wants to go rogue and, like, not tell anyone in his entire alliance what he's going to do. I'm really not clear on why. Do we know why he wanted to keep this a secret? But nonetheless, he wants to put up your boy and mine and everyone's Paul.
Yeah, I can't even sit here and try to dissect what's going through Cody's head. It's maybe it's just like a Jeff Kent style thing about returning players, or God only knows.
Well, is this even the wrong impulse? Like, I'm tempted to say no. That's the right move for Cody. Yeah. Like, get Paul up and out of here. Like, Cody, of all people, is the only one in the history of reality TV who understands this.
Like, honestly, if you take a shot at Paul in the first week and it doesn't go well, then you are kind of doomed at some point anyway, right? Like, if Paul is able to establish that kind of dominance in the first week, then your goose was probably cooked and it was only going to be a matter of time. Why not take out the biggest threat in the house immediately? And even if you don't rate Paul at all as a player, just by virtue of having that experience and being this veteran, he's going to have a command over other people that is just unrivaled in a house, and that's on top of his substantial, like, just natural charisma. So yeah, I don't hate the impulse, hate the execution, not so high on that, but I think the idea is a solid one.
To speak to something you just said, Paul on one of his, like, chat, his friendship chats with America that I was watching, I think it might have been actually as he was, like, retelling the Megan story, it was very, very early into the game, he said as part of it, he was like, you guys can't even fathom what an insane advantage it is to be a returning player in this game. Like, the vets on my first season are fucking idiots. Like, they all completely blew it. Like, I have such an insane advantage getting to be a returning player. My one concern, like, if Cody hypothetically were to think in these terms, which he obviously never would, but if we want to be upfront about, like, what matters early on and certainly later on in a season of Big Brother, it is being popular with America. I question the wisdom of putting up America's favorite returnee that they saw fit to bring back by himself week one as HOH. I don't know if that's the right foot to get off on.
Yeah, but then the alternative is going up against him later in the season when, presumably, unless he does something to just cause this heel turn, he's still going to be America's favorite player. And whatever advantage, comes into the game at a later stage, he's going to be more likely to get. So I don't hate the impulse of just trying to cut him off right now and just stop any of that from happening.
Okay, and this is probably a good time to get into something that we should have brought up earlier when talking about Netta, but this has, of course, been the big talking point, and we'll get more into it as we talk about week two when Paul wins this next HOH. There has been a lot of speculation, you know, after getting this free pass through the early rounds that now the entire house knows about, and now winning HOH in week two, that Paul could be en route to the same path that Netta found herself at in BB Canada 5, or on in BB Canada 5, where the minute, you know, 10 minutes after her immunity expired, she was up and out in a live double eviction. Do you think that could continue to be that could be the case for Paul down the line?
Yeah, Netta came down with a severe case of HOHitis despite not being HOH, which is a really unfortunate spot to be in. And that power just really went to her head, and she was unable to, you know, she occasionally deigned to interact with some of the other plebs in the house, but she never actually built those solid connections that would get her further. And I worry that Paul, he understands the importance of keeping your people close and making them trust you and developing these bonds and so on. But I worry that he's going to start overplaying. So he goes and wins HOH in week two. Firstly, the fact that he's even eligible to win HOH when he's already safe is kind of messed up, if you ask me. But
well, they shouldn't know about it at this point. Like, if they Paul, you have to sit out, That
makes sense, but it's like it's an unfortunate consequence of Paul getting this in the first place. It makes it an even worse idea.
But that's the point, is we want Paul to have no downside, complete free roll, but can still get whatever he wants. Like, I think I've told this story before. Like, the one time in my life I went and played laser tag, it was like a 20-minute game, and my vest malfunctioned like 2 minutes into the game. So I took it to like the guy in the booth, and he gave me like God mode where I couldn't die. So I just walked down the middle of the path, just like killing just like firing at people. And that's basically the mode that Paul and Netta have been in. And except they're like going out of their way to get targets. It'd be like if they knew that their God mode would expire in 5 minutes and they were still doing that.
Right. So when Paul wins HOH, drawing an even bigger target to himself, I would say the absolute priority for this week is to not do anything controversial, have a safe week, make people think that actually, despite his bluster, despite how loud he is, he's actually just a pretty solid guy that I can trust, and he's going to do the kind of predictable thing that we've all agreed on, make the easy nominations, and we can have a pretty quiet week. None of us have to worry about anything. And instead, he's coming up with these ideas of, okay, so what if I nominate two of my own alliances pawns, and then we can backdoor? It's just, no, just... Even if you think there's some merit to not having Cody play in the veto at all, which I agree there is, like, I think it's much better for Paul if you just nominate the two of them up front, and then worst case, Cody wins it, fine. You only have to put up one other person, everyone can vote out Jessica, it's fine, you're done. Instead, you're opening yourself up to so much just random nonsense, like, okay, you put up Alex and someone else, and then Jessica wins the veto randomly, and now you have to vote out one of your own alliance members. The other one's going to be furious at you. The rest of your alliance is going to be mad at you. It's a mess.
Right. Now, I remember, I turned on the live feeds after the episode ended, and we did get to catch the end of that HOH competition as it was going on, where Paul rolled the ball, the Candy Crush crossover competition that Paul ended up winning, and it was hysterical. Within 10 minutes, he had his alliance back in whatever that small room with the blue slanted couch in it is called, with all the mirrors. And he was talking about, like, okay, so Matt and Raven, like, you two are going to go up. And, like, it was so funny to watch all these people. I swear you could, like, see on their faces that none of them were none of them were interested in this plan at all. But they were just going along with it. And Paul was, like, so high on the endorphins of winning HOH that he wanted. Like, Paul, from what I have heard, was going out of his way to say, I want this HOH, please let me get this HOH. We saw everyone giving him their tickets so he could take the max number of attempts. It seems like it was very deliberate on Paul's part that this is something he's had in mind for a long time. And then right out of the gate, he does what I would imagine is some pretty poor work in making his alliance feel good about this. And I also want to reiterate a point that Rob made on one of his podcasts about this that I think is very much worth keeping in mind. And it's something I think we've talked about before, both in terms of Survivor and in Big Brother, which is if you were Paul, and I think I said it about like Big Frank this last season or BB14 maybe, I do not think it is a good idea to be spreading the gospel that backdooring people is such a fun idea. I think you want to be sending the message of give them a chance to play in veto, because down the line, exposing these new players to these kind of, like, I don't think the idea of backdooring someone is going to be particularly deep for them, but I think the idea of presenting it as such a calculated thing where, like, we're minimizing the odds and, like, you're only planting it in their minds that this is a good idea to do to you later. Like, I can't imagine, although it really seems to be the case, that Paul feels very comfortable, like everyone trusts him, and that he's going to be in there for a long while. I think that may be some very short-sighted thinking on Paul's behalf at this point.
Yeah, as I rewatch All Stars, firstly, every modern season looks so much worse by comparison, which might be why I'm so jaded already. But also, I start to see the comparisons between recent events and that season. And this, to me, is kind of reminiscent of how the early dominant group in All Stars kind of mishandled their power, and like they had everything going for them, and it just didn't. Not to spoil anyone who's not caught up yet, but they did not maybe handle that the best way they could. And I can see the same thing happening to Paul. Like, let's say the next few weeks are, okay, someone else wins HOH, and then Matt wins HOH, or Raven wins HOH. And it's like, what is that actually going to get you? Like, what is Paul's end game here? Like, he needs to be setting himself up as someone who long-term people can trust. And if week two, the first time you get power, you're already just going haywire. Like, that's not a good sign.
Yeah, I really wonder where Paul would be ranking for me if I were to, like, rank these people. And maybe we should actually do that, like, at the end of this podcast. I hadn't thought about doing a draft, but maybe we should have, like, a must-win draft at the end of this podcast. Paul, I don't think, would be very near the top of my board, even knowing that he's safe through next week no matter what, and then could very conceivably get a couple other, like, bailouts from America.
Yeah, that's so the thing to me is that Paul on the surface, and maybe this is me just being missed by Paul, he is someone who has like a Will or Dan level of charisma, but he's not able to harness that effectively in the way that he would need to.
Right.
Like, he is like, if you took Howie and gave him Dr. Will's charisma, that would be Paul. He's just going completely nuts with it. He can't, if he had the other skills to manage it, he would be an all-time great. As it is, I still think he's a good player, and we might see him recover and put in another solid showing this season. But I don't know. It's too much too soon for me.
I think that, I mean, both Dan and Will were very able to sit still. Like, a big piece of their game was, I'm going to keep a low profile and just stay off everyone's radar, like, make it so that they don't have any incentive to want to take me out, not be in there mixing it up in the competitions and in every single strategic conversation. Like, there are plenty of times, like in poker, there are plenty of times, far more often than not, the right move is to fold. In Big Brother, far more often than not, the right move is to shut up and hang back and not really do anything. And Paul seems to be going completely the opposite direction, although I do absolutely agree. Even though he, is a losing finalist now, historically, in Big Brother, I do think he has a crazy amount of charisma just in general. And they're like, he has charisma that there is nothing that will get him in life further than that. Like, I really do feel that is like the most important thing. And while it may not be, his personality may not be best suited to the Big Brother house, I would pay $1 million to have that kind of charisma that Paul has.
So you're saying he's a compelling losing finalist then?
Yeah, exactly. I would pay him to win Big Brother twice if I could just swap places with him.
Right. The man has some gifts for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And also some gifs of him dancing around in the diary. All right.
Or gifs, if you prefer. Yeah.
Anyway, hey, I don't care. Hashtag never cared. I never cared about how people pronounce that word.
Yeah. See, the thing with Will is, like, his whole thing was to make the target on his back so big that it became invisible. I worry that Paul is making the target on his back so big that it's massive and he's going to be evicted at some point.
Right. Well, Will is deliberately, both times that he ended up playing Big Brother, saying, you guys can get me out anytime. Everyone hates me. I'm never going to win a competition. You pick the week and I'll leave. Whereas Paul seems to be in there really wanting to mix it up and control every single aspect, which, as you're saying, like, is making the target so big that it's all anyone can see, rather than that it's so big it's invisible. And I know this was a very weird week where by the end of his HOH week, after Cody had finally made his fifth nomination, he decided he actually wanted to work with Jillian in that side of the house. And that's not typically the case. But some examples that are coming to mind for me are like for the very first HOH, Mike Boogie in Big Brother 2 put up Sherry or Cheryl as the complete
Cheryl.
Pawn, and she,
come on.
Cheryl, and she had, sorry, she ended up going Paige from one season of Big Brother Canada. Seems like maybe someone more in line with like the Jillian type.
That's a deep cut right there.
Like the Carol Journeys of the world. I think there are plenty of people, you know, the Big Brother history, to quote Marcellus Reynolds, is littered with the corpses of people like this.
This is just an excuse for you to show off your oddly encyclopedic knowledge of first boots from random Big Brother seasons from a decade ago. But Jillian, I did not partake in all of the pre-game press stuff, so I didn't know just why all of my Twitter feed was savaging Jillian constantly. She seemed fairly boring, fairly nondescript, and thought, okay, she's probably not going to be a big player this season. But people just absolutely hated her, and I never really knew why. Someone mentioned that, like, she said she liked Trump in one of her pre-game press things, and people obviously didn't take kindly to that, or maybe there was some other reason, but it feels like she got a lot of hate for someone who really had nothing offensive or really anything at all about her.
Yeah, she really didn't have a whole lot to say. And do you feel like that may have been her downfall? And may I also throw out the example while I'm at it? I think was her name from BB4. She was like 19 years old. She was someone's ex.
Yeah, Michelle Marody. Blonde yes, girl. There we go. Come
yeah.
on.
Yeah, look. I don't remember. Whose ex was she?
You
was
don't
she,
remember?
She wasn't, let's see.
No.
She was Justin's ex, maybe?
No. Allison was Justin's ex.
What was the guy's name? Dave? Is that his name? The
David.
Was that
David? The, David yeah, Lane, David. Big Brother sensation, okay. Superstar.
Yes. Okay, but anyway, do you feel like Jillian, if she had been in there with something to say, could have potentially changed her fate here? Because it really seemed like this vote came less down to Christmas versus Jillian and a lot more down to, are you Team Cody or are you Team Paul? So I'm really not sure. When she ended up being the person from that side of the house who was up on the block, if there was much she could have done.
Yeah, you could say a more active player would not have found themselves as the honorary member of Team Cody, who somehow ended up there during Cody's HOH. But I don't know. I think if she had had more to say for herself, it may have helped. But the best we can say is she wasn't really doing herself any favors.
Yeah. I mean... Do you think that Jillian is going to be someone you would consider like a dud from a Big Brother casting point of view? Because I get the jokes that like I would happily grant that she is probably the least interesting person out of this whole cast. Like, I'm definitely not explicitly like upset that Jillian is the one who ended up leaving this week, but I don't think it's fair to lump her in with the people who have gone at like Victoria, to use a classic example, who just went in there and did absolutely nothing. And maybe Victoria's exaggerated because she was in there for like 95 days or whatever.
I don't know. I can't imagine that if Jillian ended up going in week 11 instead of week 1, that would have led to a whole different season, and we'd be saying that now we're robbed because we didn't get to see all of that play out. So I don't know.
I mean, I just don't think we necessarily would have seen Jillian as like a Gen City type who never really has any desire to get it going. I think we could have seen a scenario where, like, had things gone differently for Jillian, she would have been more willing to open up game-wise. Nonetheless, she is going to be our first real live eviction boot of the summer. One thing we skipped over that I wanted to quickly touch on is Christmas ended up breaking her foot here. And I wanted to get your take on that quickly, because this is not a minor injury and this is very early into the season. Did you feel like I know we had Megan leave on her own volition and Cameron leave on night one. Did you feel like this is something they could have conceivably pulled her out of the game for, though? Because it really looks like she's going to be in a cast for a long time.
And it sounds like it almost came to that based on what she and others were saying. So definitely a testament to her own willpower and physical fortitude, I guess, that she's still there right now. I wonder how it is going to affect things, because we spoke about, like, one example was Tyson when he injured his arm in the Survivor season he won, and that was taken as a sign that, oh, well, Tyson, who you would think of as, like, this massive physical threat, wasn't someone that you had to worry about, and people were saying at the time, like, this might be the best thing that happened to Tyson, because he gets to somehow slide under the radar. And so for Christmas, who is, like, this professional bodybuilder, like, obviously is a physically imposing player, maybe this just erases all of that. And okay, she's probably not winning competitions anytime soon, but maybe that's a price worth paying.
Right. And I think that honestly might be the key. As someone who plays my fair share of fantasy football. I have tracked some ankle and foot and similar injuries before. A lot of people are just out like 6 to 8 weeks. I feel like there's more game time than like these people are playing NFL games 2 months later. I'm pretty sure Christmas could potentially do maybe not like an OTEV competition, but I think she will be able to compete in slightly more physical stuff if she is in there like 8, 9, 10 weeks from now. I think that is definitely still in play, and I think you're right that in the meantime, this could be the best possible thing for Christmas is not being able to compete. Like one of the things we've always talked about in terms of just like Big Brother theory is back during Big Brother 8 when Jamaica gave up her right to participate in 5 straight HOH competitions. You should never even put her on the block at that point. Like she should never go anywhere when she can't do anything to you.
Yeah, it might be that this injury recovers just in time for her to make a run if she's still there towards the end after everyone has ridden her off and let her slide by, because of course she can't do that now that she's injured her foot. But then also, as we saw with Kevin in the most recent Canadian season, like a lot of these competitions towards the end are mental. So if you're writing someone off just because they have some physical injury, that's not a smart idea. That doesn't write them off from every single competition by any means.
Right. I mean, these people go in there knowing... at least many people will go in there knowing that, though, and like that the end games are a lot of quiz competitions about what happened on what day. So I think that, yeah, do we have any reads on how Christmas will be at that? Is she a fan enough to know that studying is a very, you know, mandatory thing to do come end game time?
I don't know. She seems like the type who, when she learns that, is going to put the effort in. Like, she's not just going to sit back and rest on her laurels. She'll get the Skittles out. She'll get the whatever those, like, hundreds and thousands or whatever it was that Kevin was using. Like, she will put the time in.
Did Paul study last year? I know he won some late-game competitions, but I did not, frankly, watch too closely the end of BB18, and I'm not sure how... that came about, what type of competitions he ended up winning. And I'd also like to just stress quickly to backtrack. Playing a lot of fantasy football does not make me a doctor, and it's very possible that she cannot participate in any competitions all summer. I definitely don't know what I'm talking about to any meaningful extent. I just think it's within the realm of possibility that maybe it heals up a bit.
Yeah, I have zero clue if Paul studied last season, but in true Paul fashion, I will have a strong take without bothering to do my research first. I'm going to say he didn't, and he won't this season, and that might come about to bite him in the ass at some point.
Yeah. All right. So this, I think the points of interest as far as how this vote ends up going, we hear from Jillian in her post-eviction exit interview with Julie that she thought she had the possibility, she thought it was likely even that she was going to get a tie vote here. And the people that she thought were going to vote her away that ended up voting to evict her were Josh and Kevin. Now, Josh has come clean and has been open about, okay, I ended up voting to evict Jillian. That has not been well received by the Codys and Jessicas of the world, but potentially more on that once we talk more about the spoiler section, once we get past the episode that aired on Sunday night. But I want to focus quickly on Kevin, who has lied about his vote to, and I believe has still maintained that and is still getting away with that, similar to how he has lied and I believe still getting away with keeping that $25,000 under wraps. I know Kevin is quickly becoming a big time fan favorite. Is he continuing to be a favorite of yours, Dom?
Oh, I love him. I don't know if a guy who is in his 60s can be called your boy, but he's certainly my man, boy, child, whatever he is.
He's not 60s. I think he's like 55.
Okay, well, I'll take the over on that. We'll see who's right.
But, okay, I don't know the answer. Again, as usual, I'm just guessing without actually doing any research.
No, but I love him, and you'd expect him to kind of flounder in terms of the game the way that some of the other people in that casting mold have done in the past. But he, so far, he's actually somehow got away with these lies that he's been telling. Like, he was saying to one group that he voted with them on the first eviction and telling the opposite thing to the other group, and it seems like they haven't compared notes yet. And given how divisive this first week seems to have been, I'm not sure those two sides are going to compare notes, so he might, I'm sure at some point he'll have some questions to answer, but for now it looks like it's all good.
Right, I think he has one of a very underrated thing going for him on these reality shows, which is people are underestimating him so much. It really seems like people, when he talks about, when he says mojos instead of emojis or whatever, we're getting at least one of those every single week on the show now. I think the people in the house are feeling like, oh, Kevin's just kind of this goofball, and what could he possibly know of? trying to get one over on me as far as the game is concerned, whereas the person everyone seems to be looking at as far as that extra vote goes is Ramsey's, who I think, kind of like Cameron already faced this season, is just going to naturally draw suspicion from fellow Big Brother players. I think Kevin has the exact opposite effect, and so far I think he's doing a great job of taking advantage of it. I love it so far from Kevin.
Yeah, even if Ramsey's wasn't bursting your eardrums open with every single diary room, he would still be under the spotlight just because of how shifty he seems, and I don't see that perception changing anytime soon.
Yeah. So let's get into round number two now. As we've talked about, Paul is our new HOH this week. And right after he wins it, he came up with this crazy scheme that he wanted. He had some master plan. And it turns out that that is going to be creatively backdooring Cody. And the real question is going to be who the people who go up as pawns are. As far as I was able to gather, Dom, it sounds like the people he ended up putting up, Alex and Josh, ended up both maybe not outright volunteering, but when he asked would anyone be okay with it, they were two people who did not say no, hell no, under no possibility am I interested in that.
Yeah, I imagine they would also be okay with not being on the block in the first place. It takes a weird kind of like masochism to prefer going up on the block instead of not going up. So if that's your concern, probably better just not put them up at all. But I guess good for Paul that he was able to avoid that.
Well, it does really seem to me like we are in the era of HOH looking for volunteers, and when people are willing, because backdooring is so popular now, both I feel like this is also true on Big Brother Canada as well. I feel like we're at a point where people are volunteering to go up on the block in spots that just make absolutely no sense to me, especially when the HOH seems very earnest and like I would definitely love it, the opportunity to nominate you if you would be cool with it. As someone who previously was inclined to go more towards like the Will Kirby school of thought of like not caring that much about being nominated, it really does feel like in modern Big Brother, especially with all of these weird twists going on where anything could really change at any point, is particularly as things concern votes, it really seems to me like being of the mindset and being vocal about I never want to go up on the block, I'm never comfortable doing it, is exactly where you want to be. Like I would have years ago criticized going in there with that opinion and being vocal about it. I think now that is absolutely the call, is go in and say I never want to touch the block.
So there's this risk not only that the house is going to flip and you're going to be on the wrong end of it, but also that your own alliance is going to decide that voting you out is the better thing to do. And it struck me that after Cody and Jessica are dealt with, or maybe even just after one of them is gone and the other one doesn't seem like such a pressing issue anymore, then this big alliance, you know, you have Paul, who is always going to be the center of attention for good or for bad. And above that, you have these couples. You have Matt and Raven, and you have Mark and Elena, and so it's going to be very tempting. Like if you're HOH and you want to kind of mix things up, it's going to be very tempting to just target a couple or target Paul, or there are these other moves you can make that it seem pretty intuitive. So I would not be if I was in that big alliance, I think the next few weeks maybe you can sit back and rest a bit, but after that it's going to get pretty bloody pretty fast, I reckon.
Well, I think let's get into the spoiler zone now, so we can start talking a little about the power of veto, because I think that would be pertinent to this conversation. So if you are not interested in being spoiled on what's going to happen on Wednesday night's episode, and this might be going up like Wednesday afternoon, and then you may be listening to it after this episode is already aired, but in case this is up super early somehow, spoiler alert, we're going to start talking about power of veto results here. So here we go. We're in the spoiler zone. Please don't at me if you got spoiled on this somehow.
People, please do.
All right. Quiet, Dom. Paul is going to be our winner of the veto here. And I want to begin this question by going back to something that you just said about Cody and Jessica. Of course, it seems like one of them's going to leave this week. And the plan, obviously, now he has already put up Cody. And it seems like Cody is essentially up and out, which is why we're doing this podcast before the Thursday of 8. It seems like we can do this with the assumption that Cody is going to leave. But I'm wondering, if, like you said, one of them's going to leave this week and then the other one may be able to get something going, I think that might be true of Jessica. I don't know if that's true of Cody. Like, I think if it was Jessica who ended up actually leaving this week, I feel like Cody would still be a big, big priority. So I want to start with, I guess maybe if you're Paul, like, and your mission statement has been all week long, I want to backdoor Cody, that it's probably worthwhile to follow through on your word here. I actually feel like backdooring Jessica might be the better move. Is that crazy to you? Especially when Cody's an idiot and will probably still try to win this next HOH, even though Paul is safe.
I don't think it's crazy at all, but it depends who's suggesting it. Because Paul, as you say, after spending the whole week, firstly, nominating his own alliance members en route to trying to backdoor Cody, and then finally getting the chance to backdoor Cody and not doing it would come across as looking even worse. I think he has to follow through. The issue is, if you put that idea out there into the cosmos, it seems so ridiculous, right? Like, why wouldn't we just vote out Cody instead? I'm saying you need to be very sure that everyone else is on the same page before even getting around to that.
I totally agree, and you do not want to come across as the guy who's thinking three levels ahead of everyone in week two of Big Brother, but I think, Dom, you are someone who is thinking three levels ahead of these people in week two of Big Brother, and you just flagged up the reason that this thought crossed my mind, which is, if we lose Cody here, who are the targets going to be in these future weeks? It's going to be the Showmances and Paul, which is us, and we're the ones who can keep Cody in to be the target.
Yeah, but I would also be the Cameron of the season, so probably don't take anything I say as gospel. I think, though, it will be interesting to see if Cody does go, and it looks like that's what's gonna happen. What becomes of Jessica now, and what does she do to try and reintegrate herself with the rest of the house? Based on what we've seen so far, she probably goes and sulks in a corner by herself, but if she can kind of snap out of it, maybe she was just distracted by being with Cody, and now that he's gone, she'll find this new sense of purpose and be able to actually do that.
I remember watching one of the LFC shows on RHAP after like one of the premiere night episodes, and I think it was Brent who flagged up like, oh, you know, once Cody is inevitably gone next week, Jessica could, if she behaves herself, become like a fan favorite, like the underdog. And I feel like that is decidedly off the table now, but I think that was once in play, that if Jessica could have stuck around here, and maybe it is in play and America will just be unhappy about it. But I like, if Jessica were to stick around here, which she obviously is, she's not even up on the block, and it looks like Cody's going to go. I agree. I think she could be in a really good spot if she can hang out and not spend the entire time kind of like pouting in the corner. Like, maybe even do spend a week or so doing that, but then get back into kind of integrating yourself within the social scene. I think she's probably someone who is not going to be viewed as a big threat by herself. I think it really is proximity to Cody that has gotten her into trouble so far. So I definitely buy that, depending on her attitude, she could fall right back into a meaningful position within the game sometime soon. Yeah. What ends up happening here, Paul wins the veto. He had promised, apparently, both Josh and Alex that he would use a hypothetical veto to pull them down when making his pitch about putting them up on the block in the first place. I actually was able to catch on the live feeds his conversation with Alex about, hey, I may have to end up leaving you up. And it really did seem like he did a good job of, like, by the end of it, she was saying, oh, don't worry about it. Like, I'll just stay up. That's fine. He ends up pulling Josh down here. And I don't think we should let this entire podcast go by, Dom, without talking about Josh. And I can't believe I'm saying that based on what we were thinking preseason and after the premiere, that Josh wouldn't even be probably in, like, the top five most visible people to this point. What are you making of America's player, I will say, without hesitation, this season preseason, Josh?
Well, he's visible because he's an absolute hot mess, and I am here for it. I'm loving every second. He is he's quite a find, for sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love it. Like, I can't wait to see more of his reaction once he's now up. We obviously haven't seen Wednesday night's episode yet. I think Josh on the block is going to be a lot of fun, just based on what Josh in the early going, when he was even threatened about the idea of being on the block, was like, when he was taking the golden apple and so forth. I think that could be a lot of fun. Josh, I think the potential is still very much there with Josh. I don't think America has been wrong about thinking Josh could be a ton of fun on the live feeds. And I'm actually glad that a lot more is going on than it just being the Josh show, the same way we've seen from people like Devin was the big comparison preseason. At this point, Dom, what would you say is the over under for Josh? If I said Josh is going to be there over under week 5.5, do you think, when is Josh getting evicted?
It's so hard to say. I
round 5.5, where counting Jillian is 1 and Cody is
right.
2.
I get it. I want to say over, but I can see him playing his way out of that and making me look as stupid as he will look in that week if he ends up going.
Right. I want to say over. I'm going to say under. I don't think it has that kind of legs. I don't think we can get another 30 plus days out of Josh, but I'm definitely happy for as many days as we can get out of him. And I guess with that in mind, I would definitely be Team Josh for sure for getting this upcoming the halting hex temptation. What do we think about how that is actually going to fall, though? We saw Christmas ended up getting the ring of replacement here, so she is off the table. Paul, obviously, off the table as well. What do you think about who will get that? I guess my question is, who's getting the third best edit of the season?
Maybe this is wishful thinking, but could it be Kevin? Like, is that?
I thought it was too leading to say could it be Kevin, but I really think it's possible, and I would love it if it was Kevin.
Is there a silent and also a not very silent majority of Kevin fans out there who are just going to support our boy and get him some nice temptations?
Yeah, I would definitely love to see that. I guess I guess if I had to make another pick, I would probably say Alex. I think she's getting a good kind of like scrappy underdog edit.
Now, see, I would be tempted to throw Raven into the mix because she, one of the big stories from the feeds in recent days is she's been telling this story about her medical conditions and about not being able to afford the bills for that and so on. And she's really acquired this, I don't want to say sob story status, but that's really become the center of attention now. And I think if they made that a focus of the edited show, then that might swing a few votes her way. On the other hand, a lot of people who are talking about that are saying that she is using it in a very manipulative way or just driving that into every single conversation, and it's really not coming across that well. So maybe if that ends up being too much, if they overdo it, then she wouldn't get any sympathy from that either way.
Yeah, I guess I'll step on this a little bit by saying that Dom and I actually just did a draft, and we'll go through those results soon. And Raven was a high pick for me. I had actually forgotten about her like medical situation when I made that pick. I just thought she was in a good kind of spot within the game and had decent enough capabilities based on what I've seen so far. But I do think you're right that if she does, make that something that everyone can't help but think about all, you know, pretty frequently, that's going to come into play, I would imagine, in people's thinking about who they want to sit next to in the final two. I think that would be something that they would very quickly jump to as a reason you cannot possibly sit next to Raven in the end. So that would concern me. I guess let's dive into this draft, Dom. I gave you the number one overall pick just because I'm such a gentleman. And then I would get the 2 and 3 picks. Dom gets 4 and 5 and so forth. Dom, tell me who you took with the number one pick and why you made that selection.
I would say you're less of a gentleman and more of a graceful loser from the previous draft. So I welcome the chance to pick first.
I won.
Wait, what? Did you?
I won the previous Big Brother draft. I won Nicole in the auction draft last year. So once Survivor rolls back around, you will get the decision on whether you want the first pick or to defer.
Technicalities. Anyway, I picked Matt.
I know this is news to you because you've never won a draft before, so you don't know how the next draft etiquette works. But
fine. So I picked Matt. I didn't have a clear number one on my board. I thought Matt, he seems like he's doing things right so far. People seem to like him well enough. Like, even when Paul was floating this harebrained scheme of putting him up on the block, he didn't explode. He didn't snap at Paul. He just kind of sat back, played along with it for now, and then was able to process and use later. Early signs are good for Matt, I think. I don't know how this thing with Raven is going to develop, and it is possible that the two of them just being a pair, albeit in a season with other visible pairs, is going to draw some attention to him. But he seems... I don't have reasons to count him out for now, and that's enough to elevate him to the top tier for me.
I think it's certainly for me, recent seasons of Big Brother and Big Brother Canada have been totally dominated by showmances and pairs, as far as I've been able to tell. And I think that this season, especially given how much just the sheer volume of them early on, is probably going to be no different. And I would say Matt and Raven are the pretty clear, to me at least, third out of three most visible showmance. Like, obviously we're about to see Cody and Jessica get broken up and they would be the clear number one. I really feel like Mark and Elena are probably going to make it. Like, Mark, I think, just physically looks so much bigger and like looks like a bigger target, and I think Elena has more of an outgoing personality and kind of makes herself more known as a presence within the house than Raven tends to, that I would guess that those two would probably probably be viewed as a collectively bigger threat than Matt and Raven. And that's part of it, like Raven's proximity to Matt and the power of pairs within this game. And also their just kind of spot within the current Cool Kids Alliance. And I think their likelihood of being involved in whatever splinter group happens from that. Raven, I ended up taking in my first set of picks with, I took Alex ahead of her. But Raven, because of that, being in that pair with Matt, I think also just has a ton of equity. And I think the two of them collectively are in a great position. Yeah, for sure. And so as I mentioned, I took Alex actually ahead of Raven in my first set of picks. I really feel like Alex is now in a really good social situation with pretty much everyone in the house, even though she was on the outs early on. I feel like essentially everything I've seen on Twitter is, wow, Alex has done an incredible job getting people feeling like wanting to keep Alex around is their idea, and she's definitely looking out for them. I think it matters a lot that she's getting a good edit on the show so far. I think Alex, I'm curious, would she have been near the top of your list?
Not really. She would have been in that kind of middle tier for me. I think the fact that she's not in the majority at the moment is a bad sign, but as we've seen so many times before, a lot the big alliance in week one of Big Brother very rarely lasts the whole way through. There's always some fracture that opens up and people can work their way in, so I'm not counting her out by any means.
Yeah, I think she's definitely in there. Your next set of picks, you took Dominique and Paul in that order. Dominique definitely would have been the next one off my board. I was not sure about picking Paul this high. It really seems to me like Paul is making a pretty big presence out of himself, as we've already talked about at great length, I suppose, early on in this podcast. But why Paul so high, first of all?
Well, there was no one else that I wanted, and I think Paul last season did show some talent for the game, even if he kind of spewed it all away at the end. And this season, like as Paul said himself, there is such a big advantage in being a returning player, even if by yourself in against other random first-timers, you would not be that capable. Just having that experience and having that knowledge is such a big edge that I think you need a good reason not to pick Paul, and maybe Paul will give you those reasons in the upcoming weeks. But for now, especially given the lack of other appealing options, I have to take Paul there. And I considered picking him first, but I was thinking you might be feeling this way, so I could maybe get him this round instead.
You could have gotten Paul much later. Yeah. I mean, Paul would have been very near the bottom for me, other than the true bottom of this board. Let's quickly talk about Dominique, because last time when we were here with Liana, I made Dominique my winner pick at the end of that podcast for some reason. She hasn't been on the show that much, but I did just say she would have been the next off my board. And like you, I'm getting to the point where it would almost be by process of elimination for me. But what little we have seen from Dominique so far has left me feeling pretty good about where she stands in the game. Do you have anything to add on Dominique at this point, other than she just looks to not be actively bad? And at this point, that's all it takes to get picked here.
Pretty much, yeah. I do like her. She does seem to have a good mind for the game. And in the times when she's spoken to the cameras, like one on one, I guess it's like one to millions, but she does seem to know what she's talking about and have a plan in mind. There have been rumors this week that she's kind of like trying to muscle in on another showmance, which could kind of get her in hot water. But I don't know. Until that actually comes to anything, I think she's a pretty safe pick for now.
Yeah. And I shouldn't say everyone else left is actively bad, because I definitely don't think that's the case. And I would, my next set of picks, I took the showmans together. I took Elena and Mark, just basically on the same logic of the Matt and Raven showmans. It really does seem like those kind of power pairs, even though people should see it coming every time, they still, for whatever reason, leave some power pair in. We just saw it with Ika and Dimitri's, although that ended up going Kevin Martin's way. But what are you going to do? I think Mark and Elena are just the more visible, the more like down the line going to be viewed as bigger threats of the two showmances that are a part of like the current like Cool Kids Alliance. I frankly just feel like Mark is too physically big of a guy to ever get away with being deep, like allowed to go deep in a game of Big Brother. And maybe that's not even correct. Like, we talk about this more on Survivor, where sometimes like the biggest guys aren't even good at a lot of what the end game challenges would require. But I just think people will look at him and see the Hulk and see, oh my God, this guy is such an obvious threat. I've got to get him out. And it really does seem like Elena's doing a good job at being, cool with people. But I also do feel like she's someone that people are not going to be able to ignore in an end game. I think they're going to if Elena's in there with a good chance, I think people are going to know it.
And it sounds like she is I don't want to say it's entirely just playing him, although there's certainly something to that. But Mark does seem more of the like the gentle giant type who might end up trusting the wrong person, maybe her, and getting screwed over because of that. And do you get that sense as well, or do you think he's more cutthroat? The way that I think someone like him needs to be in order to survive for that long.
It certainly wouldn't shock me. Like I would not say. If it came down to a situation where it was him and Elena in the end with someone that he knew he could beat versus Elena and he knew he would lose to her, I think he would still cut her. Like, I think he could pull the John Party trigger, essentially. But I do agree with your overall assessment, though, that Mark is the gentle giant type. I definitely don't think he's Mr. Pectacular 2.0 by any stretch. I think I think that actually works very much for him, is people have this, they look at him and have this preconceived notion that he's going to be kind of a meathead, and then he's almost like a kitten, his personality, a lot of the times in these one-on-one conversations. And I think people respond really well to that kind of dichotomy. So I think Mark is definitely in there social game wise with it doing very, very well. I just, again, think he's just such a big dude that people are not going to be able to look past him. All right, so your next set of picks, you ended up taking Christmas and Jason here. Christmas, I definitely agree with, would have been the next off my board, and I probably would have picked her instead of Paul. I certainly would have picked her above Paul in this spot if he was still on the board. Jason, I feel like, is just forfeiting a pick.
Yeah, I strongly considered picking Kevin here because I love him, and also he might actually be a steal at that stage of the draft. I picked Jason because everyone else, aside from maybe Kevin, has a strong mark against them, and Jason has been on the show so little that there just hasn't been any time for that yet. So,
it seems to me, though, just based on the live feeds that I've watched, it doesn't seem like Jason, he's certainly not hated, but it doesn't seem like everyone's like in love with his personality all the time. I think he does have, there is kind of, I don't want to call it like a cultural barrier with it, but I think he is kind of a different lifestyle than pretty much everyone else in the house.
Look, the way that a draft works is you have to pick someone, okay? I don't get to just step out and forfeit the rest or cash in my picks or anything. I have to choose someone. So Jason, at that point, seemed like the best option.
I was thrilled to get Kevin in my next set of picks, to have him fall to me. I think he's definitely, out of the people that were left, would have been my number one contender ever since Mark and Elena were off the board. I took Kevin and Ramses here. Ramses, I think, is interesting, where it seems like he is not doing the best job at keeping it low key. Like, I think a lot of people do get kind of sketched out by Ramses and feel like he's always scheming or always trying to plant seeds with people. And I think he's an easy person to paint that label upon. If you're like Paul trying to, or anyone trying to, make an argument against Ramses, I think he is an easy person to make that kind of argument against any given week. So while I do love having like the super fan in there, and it must be very cool for him, I definitely don't think that he is off to the best start so far. But hey, we've certainly seen Ian and Steve before him get off to rough starts as the young super fan and obviously turn things around. And then at the bottom of the board, Dom, you took Jessica ahead of Josh. No faith in your boy Josh here to close out the win, taking the under on 5.5 weeks, picking Jessica ahead of him. We've already talked about them, and then I just got Cody. He's going to be gone Thursday night, but he's still theoretically in there, and maybe some weird wild twist will go down. You never know. Maybe someone else will break their ankle and he'll get a stay of execution.
So here's a question. There's been some speculation about whether there's going to be a buyback, whether like Cameron might have the chance to come back in, whether they have this twist like on the board ready to go, but they're saving it to see who gets evicted and then who might be willing to come back. So let's say the next few boots are like Jason and Jessica and someone else. They don't want to bring someone back because that's a waste of a week and no one wants to see most of them come back anyway. But let's say it is Paul, or I think it would be the obvious example, or one of the more active players who ends up leaving in some shocking turn of events. Maybe that gets brought back into the rotation. So should we be considering the possibility that someone could come back?
I think we should definitely be considering the possibility that someone comes back, which I guess means I also get Cameron because I only got one pick in that final set of picks. If Cameron wins a hypothetical battle back, he is also on my team, for the record, once he inevitably then goes on to win the game. I think it's definitely in play. I think it will certainly happen if we see Paul end up getting eliminated anytime soon. Like, I basically think that's what it's going to come down to, is if no one that they're really desperate to see come back early on gets eliminated, maybe they just send them all back out of sequester and do the buyback later on, once they can bring back someone more popular who gets eliminated a little later on in the season. I don't know. Is that essentially what you're getting at? Is that basically, they're going to time that? Yeah. That would not surprise me at all, based on, you know, we've already talked at great length about some of the production tendencies to potentially manipulate some of the results of the game. But I don't think anyone needs another 20-minute rant about that. Dom, is there anything that the people need any more rants or any other commentary about as far as this week or next week looking ahead is concerned?
Hard to rant about next week when I don't know what's going to happen there yet. Not even my predictive powers and hot take ability extends that far. But I'm sure that the season will give us many things to be frustrated about as it progresses.
Yeah. All right. Well, I suppose then, until we come back, you can be finding Dom on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I am really looking forward to a lot of Big Brother coverage this summer. It's been a long time, and I'm ready to dive back into at least one, hopefully two, very good Big Brother seasons.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it. You can, I guess you can all, if you haven't already followed us on Twitter, rewind the podcast about 30 seconds where I said the Twitter handles already. Thank you very much for listening. Take care, everybody.